Welcome to the Entrepreneur Podcast. If you're growing a brand around your nerdy passion, you can learn from business and marketing podcasts, or you can learn from nerds like you. This is the show built by bloggers, cosplayers, gamers, artists, and other entrepreneurs that are making the things you love. How's it going, entrepreneurs? Welcome to episode 59 of the Entrepreneur Podcast by Under the Capes. I'm Tim, and I got a great episode for you this week. And this past weekend was New York Comic Con, so I saw a good amount of people out there. So if I saw you, it was great seeing you. And awesome convention. This was my third year going to that. Had a lot of fun there. Another new thing going on in my entrepreneur journey is I just started writing for Second Union. So I had Jeff and Karma on the podcast way back in episode 18, and Second Union is an awesome geek blog and news site that covers everything from, you know, pop culture news, gaming, comic books, movies, TV. And I just started writing a few editorials over there. I did a bit of coverage for New York Comic Con, and I will be writing weekly reviews for The Flash and Arrow's new seasons leading up to The Crisis on Infinite Earths, which I'm really excited about. And yeah, I'm excited to get a chance to write for a different site. Jeff and Karma they've put together an awesome site, and they've been growing with a lot of great contributors. Check out my work over there at wearesecondunion.com. Guys, I have an awesome guest for you this week. It is Castro from GiveWave Studios. He is a prop and costume maker that does some amazing work. He has won cosplay competitions with his work, and on his site, GiveWaveStudios.com, his online store, he offers a ton of patterns and kits and commissions and all kinds of great resources and things that you can buy for your costumes, and offers YouTube videos to help you learn how to do your own cosplay. And he works out of Lowell Makes, which is a makerspace in Lowell, Massachusetts, that provides all the tools and resources you need to cosplay, metalworking, woodworking, pottery, 3D printers, everything that you might need as a maker. And you can rent out space rent access to it on a monthly basis. But they also do a really cool thing, which I got to do a couple weeks ago, Cosplay Fridays, where you can just come for a Friday night, work on a project, get some great tips from Cass about, you know, directing you in the right way to go, use some tools that you might not have at your disposal. So really cool resource there. You may be familiar with GiveWave Studios because Cass joined my panel at Boston Comic Con, How to Turn Your Geeky Passion into an Entrepreneur Business. And you can check out our recording of that in episode 57 of the podcast. But this time we go much more in depth about his business, how he started by going to classes for entrepreneurship, tips for pricing out different cosplay commissions and products, and choosing the right products and kind of getting the most bang out of a single cosplay project and making multiple products out of it. So this one is a super valuable talk for cosplayers looking to monetize their business, or really any maker or crafter looking to sell their products or monetize the work they put into them. So awesome discussion. Let's dive right in. All right, I'm now joined by Castro from GiveWave Studios. Cass, thanks for joining me.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me, man.
Yes, can you tell me a little bit about how you got started in cosplaying and prop making and how that became GiveWave Studios?
How I got started in cosplay prop making, I think that goes back a couple decades. So I grew up in Haiti, and we have Carnival over there, which is like a three-day, you know, celebration, parties and costumes and stuff like that. And me and my mom used to always make costumes for that event. And so I guess I was cosplaying before I knew what cosplaying was, because I would always do, you know, not like the typical cowboys, Indians stuff. Like at the time, you know, for my age, I would always be like, I want to be Ninja Turtle, or I want to be Superman, or stuff like that. So I would make, like, you know, the Ninja Turtle shell out of like cardboard, as well as like the front. And then I dismantle a broom and wrap it to make the bow for Donatello. So I was doing stuff like that at a very young age. I kind of forgot about it as I got older, or I didn't realize that there was something for that as I got older, until a couple of friends of mine were insisting on me going to a convention with them. And I was just like, no, I don't feel like it. Because I always thought conventions were more about like meeting celebrities and getting like signatures and stuff like that, which I was never really into. And they were like, no, there's artists, there's, you know, the people that do art, there's the people who do the comics. And I was like, oh, okay, all right. So I was like, but if I go, I did some research, and I was like, if I go, I want to be like the super fans, like the people that dress up. Like, I want to make something and do that. And so I think my very first cosplay was Nightcrawler. Like, I stayed up for like two nights trying to figure out how to do a movable tail with pool noodles, straws, and floss. Like, it was intense. It worked, you know, for like a couple of hours while I was at the convention, but I had such a great time when I went there. I was like dancing, talking to other people who liked the costume, people whose costumes I liked, exchanging ideas and stuff like that. And I was just like, yo, I just felt like I had kind of found my tribe a little bit. And then as I did more and more conventions, the costumes got more and more elaborate, and I learned more and more techniques. And people started coming to me for props. It's like, well, can I commission you to do this thing? Can I commission you to do that thing? And I was like, well, you know what? Like, I really like doing this stuff. Plus, it seems like I could sort of kind of make some money off of it. Let me explore this further. And I took a leave from work. I kind of took the plunge and dived into prop making like full time. Before I did so, I did take an entrepreneurship course for like a good 4 or 5 months. That just kind of taught me the basics of business, because I'm an artist to the core. Like, I hate numbers. So, I had to really kind of like learn how the business works and how to just kind of like pick a lane and stick to it. Cause when I first started wanting to do GiveWave Studios, I wanted to do all types of stuff. I wanted to do fashion accessories and sneaker customization and, you know, cosplay stuff and furniture making. And they were just like, yo, just pick a lane, find the one that you're the most passionate about, or the one that you think will, you know, be more popular. And I ended up doing like a survey. And it, you know, cosplay just kind of like came out on top. So I focused on that, and it's been a steady grind for 4 or 5 years, but now GiveWave Studios is kind of like a thing, to the point where I'm finally able to pay myself. So I'm on payroll. The company has become incorporated, so it's its own entity, and hopefully looking forward to possibly hiring someone to add to the one man team that it's been for the past 4 or 5 years. So there's the story of that, how it came to be. I hope I didn't miss anything, but yeah.
Yeah, awesome. It's great that you understood from the beginning that it was a business, and that you kind of needed to set it up like that from the go and understand the necessities that comes along with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the hardest things to learn was was pricing. You know, what is my time worth? What is what I'm doing worth? Like, how do I like estimate how much time I'm going to take to do something? And I remember we had coaches, entrepreneur coaches, like people who were successful and were running their own businesses that were kind of like assigned to you in that program, which is called E4All. I believe it's out of Lowell and Lawrence. So my entrepreneur coaches challenged me, for that particular, dilemma. They challenged me to make a specific costume in a certain amount of time and to really make an effort to keep track of my time. So it was kind of like a control to see, all right, if I'm doing a build to this scale, how many hours go into doing something like that? And that became something that was super useful to compare any other job that came to me in the future to be like, all right, well, it took me this amount of time to do this. So it might take, you know, this much more time or this much less time to do, you know, whatever commission comes my way. So that was super useful.
Yeah. And I think that's something that'll like basically every business struggles with is pricing themselves correctly, because, you know, always starting pricing too low. And you kind of have to realize that your time is more valuable than
than what you thought.
Yeah. Especially like you said, you do like how many hours it will take to do a project, and you also have to do like if you're spending time like marketing the business and doing the accounting, and all that has to be spread out over the projects you're doing and priced accordingly that way. So
yeah,
it's like,
absolutely. Because every single thing that you do for the business goes into the pricing of your item. You know, it's a lot of small math, but you know, the numbers add up at the end of the day, you know. So me going to Lowe's to pick up materials to make something, that is a factor into what the pricing of the item, the prop, the commission is going to be. And being able to, you know, do a good job of tracking all of that stuff. You know, once you do it for a certain amount of time, like you kind of build, you know, kind of like a database of like, all right, I'm doing this prop, I'm going to have to go to this store. I know what that cost is because I've done that trip already. You know, I know, you know, how many cents or dollars to add to this commission to make sure that that step of the process is covered.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything else you do to get those accurate prices, or anything to help you that's helped you set accurate prices as you've gone?
Like usually there's just a basic formula that I kind of tend to stick to. It's the cost of the materials plus the cost of labor, which is basically like my hourly wage, whatever you set for your hourly wage, your expenses, which includes, you know, transportation or shipping for something, for a material that you're ordering for it. In my case, like I have a physical studio space. So like the studio's rent, the lights, the internet, all that factors into the build. So that's really what the expenses are about. And again, that's something that is it's different for everyone, you know, what the expenses are going to be. But materials plus labor plus expenses plus your profit, like the amount of money you want to make off of it, all of those combined should make up the full item price, you know. And of course, if you have to ship it to the person, then you figure out what shipping is and add that to it as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of my formula. Materials, label, materials plus labor plus expenses plus profit equals the item cost.
Yeah. Nice. And yeah, you mentioned one of the costs of the studio. So yeah, I finally got to come to Lowell Make. So how did you end up at that studio and getting that set up? It's a pretty nice setup.
Yeah, I love it, man. And you kind of it was fortunate and serendipitous that you came in when you did, because it was a lot messier before, especially before because we had done the panel at Fan Expo. So before Fan Expo, it was just crazy because I had like a lot of stuff going on, and during Labor Day weekend, I had the chance to just kind of like take that extended weekend off and just really reorganize and clean up the studio. But as far as how I got into Low Mix and was able to set up shop there to open up and operate my business, when I was telling the story earlier about my friends wanting me to go to a convention with them, when I did that first cosplay and when I was kind of like making furniture for my apartment that I had just gotten, because I had just moved back from Florida to Massachusetts, I was kind of like, I was really into Pinterest and shit like that. So I was like making my own furniture. I had like all these little projects that I wanted to do. And I was literally doing a lot of that stuff like manually out on the porch or in the middle of my living room, just kind of constructing my bed frame, my entertainment system and all that stuff. And my roommate at the time knew someone who was also an artist in Lowell, and he introduced us to each other and we kind of clicked. And he was telling me about a spot in downtown that has like power tools so that I can do the stuff that I was doing at home a lot faster. So we picked a date. We headed over there. And when I walked in there, there wasn't really much. So I don't know if you can imagine that space completely like empty and with just like a couple of tables for 3D printing, a couple of tables for like some metal machinery and like a couple of tables for like wood stuff. So there wasn't really much there at the time, but the essentials of what I needed were already there. And there was like 3D printing, which I had never seen before. And they had a laser cutter. So they just had like a lot of these like really advanced things at the time, you know, 5-6 years ago. And I was just like, oh, this place is really dope. And they also had a leather shop down there with a leather smith who had done, you know, work for a couple of years for like the King Richard's fairs and stuff like that. So I kind of ended up, what do you call that? Apprenticing under him when I joined the makerspace, because I initially joined because I wanted to make furniture. But at the same time, that was the same year that I had done that first cosplay. And then I realized that a lot of the skills that this leathersmith had translated a lot to the cosplay stuff that I was doing. So he introduced me to a bunch of stuff like contact cement. I was doing like hot glue before that and spray adhesive. So he had a lot of like tools and technique that made it super easy for me to do costumes moving forward. And once I was done with the entrepreneurship program, I was still in Lowell Makes. And that program was a contest also. So there were a select group of businesses selected to go through the process because there was prize money at the end of it. And I ended up coming out on top. The people selected me as like most likely to succeed. So I had a little bit of seeding capital to kind of like rent some space out of the maker space and carve out my little area so I can start running my business. I bought my own 3D printers with some of that money. And when the leathersmith moved out, I also bought a lot of his tools to keep so that I can keep working with the techniques that I had learned. So yeah, that's kind of how I fell into to Lowell Makes, the makerspace in Lowell.
Nice. And has that being the cosplay shop captain there brought you business, or have you more brought, like, have you've kind of grown that whole cosplay section yourself? Has the association helped bring people your way, or are you mostly bringing
people?
Yeah, how's that working?
Yeah, I kind of grew it, because when I was there just starting off and it was still just the leather shop, I just had like a small corner to store my stuff because there wasn't any room for rent. The majority of that space was the leather shop. So when they left, there were at least 4 or 5 members that were back there that were like myself, like did mostly cosplay, people that I brought in from that I met through conventions that came into the space and was like, you know, we would do projects together or whatever, and they would see the usefulness of the space and they in turn became members as well. So there was like a little core group of people there that when the leathersmith left and that whole space became open, I suggested to Lowell Makes that I take on that area and just transform it to more cosplay centric stuff. And so me and the board, we sat down to figure out like different ways to bring more people in. So when I would go to convention, because at the time I was still tabling at conventions. So when I would go table at conventions, I'd have like Lowell Makes stuff to pass out. And then I came up with the whole concept of doing Cosplay Fridays, which served two purposes, which is one was to build community around cosplay and create an environment where cosplayers and people who enjoy the type of stuff that cosplayers do, you know, prop making, sewing, whatever you might have it, can have a space to come for like a couple of hours and work on a project that, you know, maybe will create too much dust, or maybe they need to paint something and they don't have the place in their tiny apartment to do it. So GiveWave Studios and Lowell Makes partnered up to create almost like a new bracket of membership, which is the $10 per person Cosplay Friday thing, that allowed people access to certain tools, because we still have to be very careful about liability and insurance and stuff like that. That's why, like, as you experienced when you came to Cosplay Friday, you had to sign a little waiver just to make sure that, you know, in case anything happens. But yeah, doing that with Lowell Makes and having the presence of my business, GiveWave Studios, there, and people knowing about what I do and people seeing my cosplay has attracted more and more people to the makerspace. And it's helped both ways, in the sense that more people know about my business, GiveWave Studios, and more people have also become members of Lowell Makes because they've come for my open studio nights for Cosplay Friday. So it helps Lowell Makes, and it also helps the business, and it definitely builds community around the idea of costume building and stuff like that. So.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, how are you finding most of your clients now? Because you mentioned you used to table at conventions. Are you not doing that anymore because it was just too much work, or was it not bringing you
enough clients? Yeah.
Or it's too much work. Not the right kind of work, I guess.
Yeah, it is definitely too much work, because since the inception of the business, I've always been a one man show, and it's getting to the point where it's burning me out. But I'm also getting to the point where the business is bringing enough money in that I can possibly think about bringing someone in part time to kind of alleviate some of the responsibilities that I have, because I do like everything. And with that said, whenever I had to table, I am a very like bespoke, like a la carte, made to order type of business. You know, the only thing that I keep in stock are the materials that I need to make the things that I sell. I don't keep in stock the things that I sell per se, like finished products. I just have like raw materials. And so because of that, whenever I would go to a convention, I had to just like grind, dude. I had to spend like 2 weeks of like little to no sleep, just kind of producing as much shit as possible so I can have something to show like at a table. Because if that wasn't the case, then, you know, I wouldn't be making any money while I was there. So I had to produce like so much the few weeks leading up to tabling at the convention. It just tired me out. And after like three or four times, there was really only one time that I made like a good amount of money, and it was oddly enough the very first time that I tabled. And then any other time after that, I just kind of like broke even, or I was short, you know, $150, $200. And it was just like, all right. At that point, my Etsy shop had started picking up. People knew the name. People were finding it online, and I wasn't short of orders. So I was just like, maybe I don't need that stress, so I just stopped doing it. People had seen me around enough, at least like locally, seen me around enough to know that, hey, you know, this guy does this stuff, you know, if you need XYZ, this might be the person to reach out to. So
yeah, it seems like that's when you were still kind of figuring out the best way to, you know, offer things, whether it's commissions or building stuff up front or kits. Mm-hmm. or
Yeah, because I was still at the very beginning. The goal with GiveWish Studios has always been to, it very similarly to my upbringing in Haiti. Like there's very different social classes. Like it's just a part of the culture. So we have the poor, the middle class, and the rich, and that was something. I don't know if it was more so on purpose or subconsciously. But it's something that I also wanted to implement in the DNA of the business itself, because if you look at cosplay, there are people who it's a very DIY community. So there's a lot of people that, you know, there are certain aspects of the process of making a cosplay that certain people want to avoid and that certain people enjoy. So what I wanted to do is to build like a low tier, a middle tier, and a high tier of offering, so that anyone at any point of, you know, their cosplay skill set or journey or financial situation had something to choose from, you know. So if I made a prop as a commission, you know, the process of making that prop, I'd get a video out of it. So there was the tutorial aspect of it. That's free. That's on YouTube. You can watch that. You can make it yourself, right? And then because I've made that particular prop, I also have the patterns for that prop. That's like at the lower end of things. Like the tutorial is free, but if you also want the patterns, it's like $5-$10 for like a pattern set, like a multiple page PDF that you can purchase and download and make the stuff yourself. And then there's like a second level to it where, you know, I take advantage of the tools that I have at my disposal, like the laser cutter. So, because I have to do things in a quick turnaround. Usually when I've done a prop the first time, all the manual stuff is done. I digitize everything. So now that I have the PDF in digital format, I can also laser cut all of those same pieces on the laser cutter. So then that becomes a DIY kit. You have, you know, laser precise parts cut out, the exact same parts that I use that you can use to make your piece, so that, you know, that skips a step of the production line where you have to manually cut out your stuff. And then there's, you know, the higher end where it's the complete thing, where I make everything for you. You receive your prop and you can go to the con the same day with it. So that's always kind of been a thing that I've strived to make sure that was a part of, GiveWave Studios, is to make sure that there was, a certain level of, access for people, regardless of how much money they had to put into something. So there's always something that you can get to kind of help you along with your process, you know, because not everyone is going to drop $500 or more on a prop, right? Some people can only do the $60 for the DIY kit, or you're a high school student and you don't have that much money to drop on a DIY kit. If you have the time, you can just buy the pattern for $5 and you can make it yourself. And the tutorials are always free. So that's always been the thing with it.
Yeah, that's good, because it's not only like fitting it to different price models, because some people maybe are willing to spend $500 on a prop, but they want to make it themselves. So they'll buy your kit because maybe they don't have a laser cutter.
Yeah.
And it fits everyone, or maybe someone wants to, like, they have it and they want to go whole hog. You've got the patterns, like, it fits every level of DIY where people, whatever level they want to be involved in the
process. They want to be involved in, yeah, absolutely. That's always been the goal. It makes every project that much more extensive, because I have to think about all of those different categories for every single thing that I do. But, you know, I think it's too ingrained in what I want to offer for me to ever steer away from that.
And it also makes sure, like, when you're doing a commission or whatever, maybe the first thing that makes you do this prop is you're not just getting that one revenue from it. You're getting, like,
yeah,
all
absolutely.
The work you put in is now getting kits,
yeah,
patterns,
it's getting
YouTube.
More, yeah, exactly. So, like, every commission, you know, let's say customer X comes to me to do something that I've never done before. I get paid to do that commission. But also, you know, the public also takes advantage of it because I've recorded the process of that commission. You can see how it was done. You can buy a pattern for it, which is, you know, that same commission generates more income. So everything that I do, I want it to bring more money in. And that's why I kind of diversify all of the ways that you have access to any particular item that I sell on the site.
Yeah, and you mentioned filming the process, which you said that's kind of, it's a whole different animal and a different challenge as far as adding a lot to the process.
Yeah, yeah, it sure is. Because usually my favorite way to build this is just go for it. I'm not a big planner. You know, I don't sketch out things, and I'll measure sometimes, like, you know, a lot of like the digital stuff that I do is a little bit of measuring and just making sure that things are or to scale or going to come out the right size. But everything else is just kind of, it's always trial and error. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing half the time. I just know that I have the skills to make it happen. And then somewhere along the way, I'm going to figure out how to do it. Which is what makes the video recording aspect of it a little bit, like, is definitely my least favorite part, is making the tutorials, because of the way that I like making things. It's not very conducive to explaining to someone what I'm doing if I don't know what I'm doing to begin with. So usually, any tutorial that I've put up on YouTube, it's because it was either my second or third time around making that prop. And I was just like, all right, I know what I'm doing now. I have the steps memorized. I know when to record, when to fast forward, when to do this, when to do that, so that I can make a compelling video that would explain the processes very accurately and without skipping any steps that I would deem important. So because of that same notion, there are so many props that I've done that I don't have tutorials for because I just did them the one time. And, you know, I didn't feel like bothering with interrupting the creative process with trying to set up a camera, figuring out the right angles and stuff like that. But my last video that I did, I tried to implement, which is the Urbosa's Scimitar of the Seven from Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. So I've been thinking about implementing a hands-off way of making the props. So I have a GoPro mounted to my chest, and it's kind of like a first-person view. So it's like playing a shooter. So you see my hands, you see what I'm doing, and I can talk and start-stop it without really interrupting the creative process. So I'm going to try that a little bit more moving forward because I did enjoy the process of that a lot more than setting up a camera on a tripod every other step or so. So moving forward, hopefully I'll have way more videos on YouTube and I'll be able to capture things the first time around as opposed to, you know, dreading making a second version of the prop just so I can record a video.
Yep. Yeah, because it's that tough balancing act of wanting to record everything and get a ton of content out there, but also kind of having to record it in a intentional way, like you're not just making a video tutorial.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that does show in your videos where they're positioned right and they're, you know, you're making it to instruct someone instead of just,
yeah, there's thought put into it, you know what I mean? It's not one of those situations where, you know, I don't do really a lot of like live stuff. So I'm thinking about possibly doing like Twitch or YouTube live at some point or something where I don't have to worry about editing. You just mm-hmm. kind of record it and people watch it if they have the time or they can fast forward through it, whatever the case may be. But I find those things are very interesting, especially because in a lot of these media platforms like the Twitch, the YouTube Live, like you can interact with people. People can ask you questions and you can answer. So which is great, too, for me, because a lot of the times I'm by myself making props. So it's kind of like having company while I'm making it. So looking forward to seeing, like, exploring some of those channels a little bit more sometime in the near future.
Yeah, and that's a whole new audience to tap into, a whole new medium for your current audience to engage even further.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because the end goal really is to really start making money off of these channels, the YouTubes, the Twitches, and really people's consumptions of my digital stuff. So like more so, I want to make more money selling DIY kits and patterns and making money off of like tutorials and stuff like that, rather than the stuff that I sell online right now as like finished products. Because if whenever I get like a flame prop to make or anything that's like super manual that like only I know how to do, I just kind of like, it starts feeling like work at that point. It doesn't become fun anymore when it's just like the 506th time you've done something. It becomes a little tedious, but you know, hey, keep buying them, guys. It's a complaint, but it's not a complaint. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah. But yeah, like you said, as you're expanding and thinking about bringing on someone new, that's kind of the problem to solve, is the business can't really grow if it's 100% dependent on how many hours you put in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then I'll burn out. I won't be able
to do it. Well, and there's only so many hours.
Yeah, there's only so many hours. Like my days are, you know, 12 to 15, sometimes 18 hours long. You know, and I wouldn't say a good chunk of that time is spent bullshitting, but, you know, there's at least like 2 or 3 hours in there where I'm just like scrolling through, you know, the internet, looking for new ideas or checking stuff on Instagram, replying to people or whatever, which is, it's still relevant to the business, but it doesn't feel like I'm being productive when I'm doing those things. So it always, sometimes it feels like a waste of time when I really know it's needed to an extent.
Yeah, I like to still say it's work, but it doesn't feel like it to the point where you feel good about it after the...
Yeah, exactly. You got one of those things that like limits my social media usage on my phone. It's just
you
have like 15 minutes left. It's just like, all right, well, if I'm not doing something like replying to someone, then I'm not putting the phone down, so I'm not scrolling through aimlessly. Sometimes I'll catch myself doing that too. It's just like I went for a specific thing and then I'm just like on my feed like looking, so just, put it down.
That's what it's tough when social media is technically part of your job, but
it really is. It really is. I can't get away from it.
But yeah, what other future plans do you have for the business as you grow?
Future plans. That's really, I kind of broke it down already. Definitely bringing someone else in, for sure, to kind of help alleviate a lot of the responsibilities that I have. Definitely taking a shift away from just producing the same things over and over again and really trying to get back to the creative, part of coming up with new concepts and prototyping things. Like I really enjoy the discovery part, the figuring out, you know, like I'm starting at A, I really don't know how I'm going to make B, but the path between it is really what I enjoy the most, because you learn so much and you discover new things and you get to combine techniques. But so definitely more trying to make more money off of the video tutorials and the DIY kits and the patterns and stuff like that. Things that don't take too much time away from that creative stuff. So that I don't feel like too burnt out, you know, when something new comes up. Cause when this first started, you know, I'd get a whiff of a movie or of a new game coming out and I would already have like a prop ready, you know, for it, like before the release. Now it's like 2 months after, you know, Giveaway Studios comes up with something. Mm-hmm. And this business is very like, you have to be quick. You have to be ahead of the trends if you want to, you know, make money selling props, because 3D printers are super available right now. They're super affordable. Like anyone can get one. There's a huge repository of STL files that people have online for free. So most likely someone's done the thing that you're thinking of doing. So even if you don't have the skills to model someone, something yourself, like you can possibly find it for free or maybe just buy it for $5. So I have to, you know, I got to be quick. I got to be quicker than the competition. And because I have an online shop, I don't have that luxury anymore. That fun. I don't have that the ability to have fun with that anymore, to really try and be the first to do something. Because I also do enjoy doing that. I'm a very competitive person, so I just want to be the first to make this.
Yeah, because the first one with the YouTube tutorial for whatever new
you're the one that everyone's looking for. You're gonna get, you know, the most views, and you're gonna be likely the one to pop up at top, even when there are other 5, 6, 7 other ones that come up. And so that all plays into the whole like really wanting to be able to make more money off of that type of stuff first, and you know, making finished props, you know, as like a secondary
thing. Yeah. Well, this has been really cool. Do you have one final piece of advice for someone just starting out building a geek brand?
Final piece of advice for someone just starting out building a geek brand. I would say don't get discouraged by the amount of things that are out or that already exist. Just because someone has done it before doesn't mean that you doing it won't shine a new perspective on it, or, you know, that people won't enjoy your way of explaining it over the other things that are out yet. So, you know, do it because you want to do it. Do it because you have fun with it, and do it because you enjoy the process. And if you go into your business with that mindset, like eventually things are going to work out, as long as you stay on top of it and you're really diligent about, having a goal and following through, with everything that you're doing to get your business up and running. So that's basically it.
Yeah.
Like, don't not do it because it already exists. Just do it because you want to do it.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Well, yeah. Where should people go to, check out your store, check out your, you know, find you on social media, follow you?
Yeah. So most of the stuff that I do is all the same name. So everything is social media. Twitter is @GiveWave. Instagram is @GiveWaveStudios. So is YouTube, GiveWaveStudios. I do have a Twitch account, even though I only have like 2 videos on there. So that's also GiveWaveStudios, but I'm gonna throw it out there. Yeah. The website is where you guys can get, patterns, DIY kits, finished props. There's also a section called freebies that is slowly being built up. So that one is going to be a repository of a lot of props that I've done like in the past that I'm probably never going to revisit. So those patterns or those 3D files, those are going to live there for free. So if people want to go check those out, that's kind of a way to give back to the community. What did I say? I do have the Etsy store as well. That one is going to see less and less updates because I'm trying to push for most of my sales to come from the website. I'm not going to close the Etsy store per se, but it's not going to have, stock of the most popular things, nor will it see any of the new things coming out either. So if you're more comfortable shopping on Etsy, I do have that, but if you want to see all of the other stuff that I'm making and anything that I'm going to be making in the future, the website is definitely the place to go. And Facebook as well. And I always tell people that I'm always open to people who have like any questions about anything. I get a bunch of people reaching out to ask like where I got this or how did I do that through different social media channels. And as much as I have time for it, I always try to get back to those inquiries. So I'm accessible if people need.
Nice. Cass, thanks so much for coming on.
Awesome, man. Thank you for having me again.
There you have it, guys. My talk with Cass from GiveWave Studios. I got a ton out of this one, and hopefully you did too. The thing that I really liked that he mentioned was getting the most out of... So when he'll do a single cosplay build, he'll then get a YouTube video, a template, a kit, selling the full props. So he gets a lot of use out of that one project. And I think that's something that no matter what your entrepreneur business is, you can learn something from that, whether it's, you know, a podcaster putting their podcast up on YouTube, pulling out clips that you can put as quotes on Twitter, maybe making a blog post roundup of, you know, some of the parts of your podcast, and vice versa. You know, a blog can be repurposed as a YouTube video. There's many different ways that you can transform the content that you're already creating to get a lot more content out of it, because that's a big part of it, not only for selling a lot of stuff, but also just having a lot of content to share out there to grow your message. So yeah, definitely check out GiveWave Studios. You can find them on Instagram at givewave.studios, on Facebook at GiveWave Studios, Twitter at GiveWave, and givewavestudios.com. And also check out their YouTube content for a bunch of great tutorials. And I will include links to all of that in the show notes at underthecapes.com/episode59. And until next time, I hope you got something out of this. I hope you keep learning and keep making and heading towards your passion. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening to the Entrepreneur Podcast by Under the Capes. I hope this episode has helped motivate you to either start or grow your geek brand. If you liked the episode, I would love if you could give us a rating and a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you happen to be listening from. And feel free to connect with us on social media, on Twitter at Under the Capes, on Facebook at Under the Capes, and on Instagram at Under the Capes Cosplay. Thanks so much, and have a great day.